Blog Talk Radio.
Never violate the codes of the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't keep, and I would never testify, cop out for a plea, or surrender information on my boys to the police, and you could never catch me on the block without a strap, and I would never pull it out unless I'm out to black, and I could never forget my homies dying for their scratch, but ever pouring out liquor for them, God to the back, and I would.
Appreciate you coming out to fuck with us in the building. I see y'all out there, man. I just want y'all to know one motherfucking thing. I would never, ever violate the codes in the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't keep it out.
Heads up, eyes open, the fifth clip. Face and look at some of this shit. This should be the chairman checking in. Now, when I say cold of the sea, we talking about the path of clubs. Not trying to party clubs, that is. I would never violate the cold of the sea. Would never speak nor serve the interests of our enemies. And if I say that I'm with you, we'll come get you. You best believe that like bad luggage, we'll never leave. Now, of course, I can never say that I never will go broke. Because sad to say that we ain't never had this shit roll. Well, I can never say how it's gonna go. One thing for sure, two things for certain. They know to shut up motherfuckers like us. They gonna have to kill us, close up in the casket. Read a quick verse and close the motherfucking curtains.
Never be sad, I would, I like a hoe. Never been drunk, I'll never let it slide. Never let it go. Never ever, never ever ever. No, get on my level, hoe. Or go get a shovel, hoe. It's never in question for my manhood, I get down. I'll never switch, never stick, never sit down. I never hesitate to squeeze a nigga six rounds. I never squat to take a piss, who's the bitch now?
I would never put profit over politics, principle, nor our people. I would never sell my soul. Never put bullshit over business and never place good upon the evil. You see, why I'm determined to die before being dishonored. Committed to being captured and killed before being capitulated. And that would be perfect and pushing this shit to the motherfucking living. And if need be, pull the motherfucking trigger with a pistol without no hesitation. I will cast a cover to my last breath, to my last goddamn roar. And we'll never forget what them pigs did at 4:35 a.m. in 1969 in Chicago on December the 4th. Never, never, never.
I never ran, I never will, I ain't never scared. It's in my bloodline, the realest nigga ever bred. And that's some of the realest shit that I done ever said. And I can die, but through my lyrics, I ain't never dead. I never disrespect my mama, never disrespect her mama neither. I never turn my back on Jesus. I never get caught off in the system, I believe her. Man that follows man, ain't a man, and I'm a leader.
I will never cross my comrades and never forsake our fight for freedom. And if you listen to my second verse, let me say it again just in case y'all want to listen. I will never put profit over politics, press with nor our people. I will never disrespect the legacy of Minister UEP. Never betray the Black Panther Party. And never bow down and lay down a legacy at the feet of our enemies. Never, never, never. I am a Panther cub by birth and by battle. This is my bloodline and my prison time. And when it be, by wherever enemy, if they try to hijack this legacy, wherever it be, not on our watch. For we'll never, never, never have it. Never, 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 never.
Never gonna turn cold, my nigga. I can never trade. I never cross my homies out. That ain't how I'm made. And I never had not one regret on how I was raised. I'm from the ghetto where I slung and rapped it every day. Never knew no other way. This ain't gonna never change. Never gonna bite my tongue. Fuck what a nigga say. 100 with myself. I swear to God I stay the same. And when I finally got my paper, I was on my game. Never talk a nigga down. Do your thing, dawg. Never hate a dude for trying. That's the same, dawg. Get your motherfucking money. That's the thing, dawg. Too many homies die young. Feel my pain, y'all.
October 23rd, 24th, 2016. All roads lead to Oakland, California. Lonely legacy of Black Panther Party. Protected, respected, and never, never neglected. Never, never.
Thank you.
whittle in the middle like Moni. You're phony cause your style's baloney, but that rock's no filler. Ain't a girl in Sierra putting rappers on ice and lock your bodies in the chiller. The way you bust it up, I'll chuck nasty sound like throw up, blow up, then go nuts like a lady ninja killer. I draw you deep beneath the surface. It's the rays from Page, I heat it up like a furnace. My steel got smoke, check the gamma ray from the She-Hulk. Stomping through your territory, new rap female category winner. And your style gets played out like the spinners. Not a soprano, I alto, the rage is a tenor. My voice is just right, I bust hypodermic to get in the mind's eye. Making you hip-hop junkies wanna fly like eagles. My style sharp as cathedral steeples. Showing and proving even a lady can be diesel. So I break a breaker, you best keep on trucking. And roll on with that chicken shit you're plucking. You're stuckin', stupid, you doofus. I'm rhyming so hard, I'm knocking out your toothin'. A teacher, believe this shit, butthead just get played out like Beavis.
Politicizing the gun. We be the ideological sons and daughters of the black cats. And we the ones who brought the days of the dark shades and alphas back. And we ain't got no problem with you praising the Lord if you wouldn't to bring the spirit of Nat back. Who we be? We We be the ones with rest records, longer than average cats rap records. By no means, this ain't no intentional shit. In fact, it's one of the signs of us being under attack. Therefore, these statistics are plainly mainly due to the state's attack. See, we the ones that don't get due credit until the state say it's safe to say it. In other words, a lot of y'all will show us some love after we long gone in the grave. But for now, many see it correct politically to only have the ability to speak in secrecy about the moves we make. Who we be? We recognize the central potential of armed propaganda. And we done raised the bar of what it is to be a diehard. In this game, we done the thing of what it is from a cat considering himself a criminal to a convict to a prisoner's of conscience. Who we be? You see, we the enlisted men and women in the People's Army. And our kinfolk fall from the trees, the leaves, the lights of those of Chairman Fred and Fran Fanon. We sprout from the seeds of UEP, not long, but the one that sent the sentiments to the Viet Cong. It was on the right side of the question of the U.S. aggression against the Vietnam. Man, we far surpassed the grass and then got up under the gutter. In fact, some cats say that we consider ourselves weeds. Yeah, that's us. Who we be? Man, we so financially fucked up that our motto goes, and the POCC is in debt, but not dead. We broke, but not broke. Where we come from, where we at, what's our membership? Well, we be the residue from the slave ships, and the rest of the flesh the sharks too full to eat after we was thrown overboard. In fact, some of us still at the back of the bus. See, we the ones fighting to be free, but in the meantime, between time, looking forward to prison visits. And when we talk, you best believe that they listen. We come from college campuses and street corners. We do more for 10 a.m. than your elected officials or the Marines do in 1,000 mornings. We keep our eyes on the prize, and we also recognize in this time and place, one can never negate the question of race. But in the same breath, we also know that on this here slave ship, all black folks ain't in the same position. But we'd be remiss if we negate to mention that we still got to deal with this here class contradiction. We see theory without practice is blind, and practice without theory has a chance you might just came up and got lucky that time. POCC, what's our call? Free them all.
Hey, Suge, what I tell you, nigga, when I come out of jail, what I was gonna do? I was gonna start digging into these niggas' chests, right? Watch this. Hey, quick, let me see them binoculars, nigga. The binoculars. Yeah, nigga, time to ride. Grab your bulletproof vest, nigga, cause it's gonna be a long one. Now me and Quick finna show you niggas what it's like on this side, the real side. Now in the squad, it's gonna be some real motherfuckers and it's gonna be some pussies. Now the real niggas gonna be the ones with money and bitches. The pussies gonna be the niggas on the floor bleeding. Now everybody keep your eyes on the prize cause the ride get tricky. So you got some niggas on your side that say they're your friends, but in real life, they're your enemies. Then you got some motherfuckers that say they're your enemies, but in real life, they eyes is on your money. So your enemies that say they true, but in real life, them niggas are be snitches. It's a dirty game, y'all. Y'all got to be careful about who you fuck with and who you don't fuck with. Cause the shit get wild, y'all. Keep your mind on your riches, baby. Keep your mind on your riches. 911, it's an emergency. Cowards tried to murder me from hood to the birds. Every one of you niggas heard of me, shit. I'm legendary, nigga, scary and paralyzed. Nothing more I despise than a liar. Cowards out. My mama told me when I was a thief, such a vicious motherfucker, why these devils set me free? I proceed to make them shiver when I deliver criminal lyrics from a worldwide mob figure. Thug niggas from everywhere, Mr. Machiavelli. Niggas is waiting for some thug shit, that's what they tell. So many rumors, but I'm infinite, immortal outlaw. Switching up on you, ordinary bitches like I'm south, or you get left. And every breath I breathe until the moment I'm deceased, to be another moment falling as a D. I'm gripping crowds and I start again. Eternally I live in sin until the moment that they let me breathe again.
No heart for the life. I was in every hand. Then by five, I was in all of them. Whichever one was winning.
With so much pain to some niggas it hurts. My gun bust, if you ain't one of us it gets worse. Bitch niggas get they eyes swole in fly mode, I'm a homicidal outlaw. And 5-0, get your lights on, the fight's on. Tonight's gonna be a fucking fight, so we might roll. My own homies say I'm heartless, but I'm a G to this until the day I'm gone, that's regardless. Ride by, niggas bow down. Thought I rot in jail, pay bail, what niggas out now. Throw up your hands if you thugged out. First nigga act up, first nigga getting drugged out. I can be a villain if you let me. A motherfucker if you do upset me. Tell the cops to come and get me. Rip the crowd like a phone number. To start again, don't have no motherfucking friends, nigga. Look
fucking stop.
No, no hype for the fight. Everybody know my nigga is drinking. Every week he get his ass whooped. He never wins a fight, but he always wins a fight.
There's no hype for man.
No hype for the fight.
And making money in the 50 states. Keep your mind on your shit and fuck a punk bitch. No longer living in fear, my pistol close in hand. Convinced that this is my year, like I'm the chosen man. Give me my money, you label me as a don. If niggas is having problems, hope if I ever run, I died and came back. I hustle with these lyrics as if it's a gang of crack. Fucking is in my spirit, I'm lost and not knowing. Scarred up, but still flowing. Energized, still going. Can it be fate that makes a sick motherfucker break? Only jealous ass power to the evil and fake. What will it take? Give me that baseline, I'm feeling bomb. Death row, baby, don't be alarmed. The homie quick gave a nigga a beat and let me start again. Represent, cause I've been sick, the heart
for
me.
No heart for the fight.
Myself, nigga, I keep that blicky with me.
Keep the blicky with me, this my new year resolution. Tell me who was shooting, tell me who was on the news. Niggas don't need to answer questions when they up in their room. If they gotta play their position, little homie, just be cool. We was stuck up in the basement trying to find another way. Hope we see some light, pray we finally see some better day. Then I found the route, the money was the only other way. When you win, it seem like everybody trying to get a taste. Can't relate, slamming past like heavyweight. Serving place, no dinner, they were nigga in my DNA. I count the money before I fuck the bitch. She say I'm standing, guess I'm celibate. Only time I fuck is when I'm thumbing it. Breaking down these bed, don't need a scale. It free my nigga locked behind the wall, didn't tell. It's fuck them niggas, they know who they is. It's fuck them niggas still. Trying to dodge the feds and count a meal.
Let's go. 2021, I don't need no honey niggas with me. Got my niggas sticking with me. My
they want niggas with me. New Year's resolution, I'ma keep 100 bitches with me. I secure myself, nigga, I keep that blicky with me. 2021, I don't need no 100 niggas with me. Got my niggas sticking with me, my day one niggas with me. New Year's resolution, I'ma keep 100 bitches with me. I secure myself, nigga, I keep that blicky with me.
Here's up, eyes open, the fist clench, this hit be the jam, and Fred Huffin Jr. Coming in and Black Panther Party coming in, hit y'all living this here politics. You see, this here's a PSA, a people service announcement. In regards to they getting them hitting us from every which way, including motherfucking loops. From locking us down to coronavirus to the police shootings. And then every time we raise up and demand justice above us, these motherfuckers quick to rename and defame us another bunch of riders and looters. You see, we cutting cover from the cloth with cats like Pop. And we got them, we gon' ride this motherfucker out to the last beat and the motherfucking bullet drop.
Struggle correctly, you should struggle, but you should struggle. We said dad a struggle and you dad a win. Dad not to struggle and you don't deserve to win, but we have to struggle properly. They don't want to admit this. There are a lot of young organizations around, but we are political organizations. We are an organization that understands that politics is nothing but war without bloodshed, and war is nothing but politics with bloodshed. That it's just like you stretch something, and it goes, you can stretch things, they're going to mean another thing. If you stretch politics so long, it'll be war, and that's where we at.
42 shots through that bedroom. Mama Cool was laying asleep up in that bed too. That's when J. Edgar Hoover sent the feds through. You know them grimy ass ways that the feds move. Said they sent the memo saying the Panthers gotta go. Created a plan to start COINTELPRO. Tricked O'Neal and then he turned into a informant. The chairman killed the wee hours of the morning.
I'm feeling like Mike Brown, I'm feeling like Trayvon, I'm feeling like I gotta stay armed with hoodies and ARs. I'm feeling like I gotta black down, but this is a straight war. So tell them that I'm on the front line, I'm taking no days off. Yeah. Said it's mental slavery, yep, it's all in your head. If you ain't got your liberation, you better off dead.
Yeah.
He's spotting day plantations, they call it the feds. Whatever happened to the riders, guess all of them dead. I don't care if it's a koofy bow tie or a fez. We need to unify people and buy some land. And when I talk about the Jacksons, I ain't talking Michael.
Nah.
I'm talking George and Jonathan marching with their rifles. You try to kill the revolution, then you gotta shoot us. This for the Chairman Fred, Mark Clark, Huey Newton. This here for Black August. Let's have a moment of silence and dedicate it to them riders that's in black coffins. I got the voice of Malcolm, mixed with the heart of Marcus. I got my knowledge from the slums, I've never been to Harvard. Tell me it's love, tell me it's hate, tell me it's pride. Tell me the reason why they keep on telling us lies. Tell me the reason why them teens in America died. From them slugs of a gun that an officer fired. Gotta understand, they consider us three-fifths of a man, which means you're not a human on this land. Dred Scott, black man, they got the same rights a white man's got. So why we steady reppin' all these damn blocks? Who thought I'd see the day when the cops would become the damn ops? We just try to land us a job, but they try to land shots. Knowledge and intelligence is more important than that gangster shit that they been telling us. I wonder who the editors, I wonder who the ones that take their time to write the papers. That fail to mention trials and tribulations that we facing. I got neighbors that was racist, that got hatred for these pretty black faces. Who are you to judge our laws, great creation? Relations to all of them great faces back in Africa. King Tut, Queen Nzinga, they set the path for us. If they could take a look at us now, they probably laugh at us. But then again, they wouldn't be laughing, they probably mad at us. Wonder how we all became thugs and drug traffickers. Let them capture us, and they building a bloodbath for us. Breathe, this water getting deep. It's way over my head, it's kinda hard for me to see. I got a queen, is she natural or pure? The mindset of Winnie Mandela, mixed with a side of secure. Said I got two choices, poverty or provide for the poor. Plus I'm fully prepared to collide with the law. I said I think we need a million men marching in the streets again. Think we need a million men marching with their peace in hand. Sometimes you gotta go to war just to have peace again. Rest in peace to Martin, time to treat us like kings again.
Now the same motherfuckers that came to kill and capture us. Yeah, the same motherfuckers that murdered and masked us. Got the gold enough gas to be asking us. Why they keep killing each other? Why they respect their mothers? What their daddies at? Why they hate being black? Why they stay unemployed? Why they don't vote? Why they don't sit together? Why they still dope? Why they fucking two tears in the bucket? Let the chairman tell you what's happening, Captain. The motherfucking cowards and corrupt is gross throughout the whole goddamn colonized community. You know what the land's bloodshed. And it's all the earth for all it's worth. Try to stick our sickles up our motherfucking legacies. How the fuck we got generations?
situations coming up. And not only know, but I even giving a fuck about go gets like Harry T. Marcus Garvey. I didn't beat motherfucker minutes to UEP. Shit. We don't know through the COINTEL Pro. We die by the time, man.
The Frenchman.
Ladies and gentlemen, the revolution. The revolution.
I want to have, I want to make my people proud. I put my city on my back and come for you now. It's the strong against the weak, the poor against the rich. The moral of the story, they ain't giving niggas shit. All the broke folks trying to get next to the rich.
Is all you wanted to pants? Jeans in my blood, my mama wanted to hand me. This is just a verse that I dedicate to the chairman. Never heard nobody say nothing fake about the chairman. And I hear a lot of people saying freedom all, but I ain't satisfied until they free my dog. If he just a detainee, why it ain't free to call? You know it costs to eat, but it's free to starve. Big nigga in every city, of course. From the Hoover to the Fort, B.O. out in the Bronx. Gotta mention the Chief, my leap, what they call him. The homie Big Meech in A-Town, he was ballin'. It's a secret society, all my niggas is real. Shout out to Kenyatta, I hope you get your appeal. And can't forget the twins, they came from the city of the wind. The time you gotta lose just to win. They said low and weak, but they ain't mention Reese and Sim. Or mention Jack Bobo and the block that had the grim. Fuck my enemies, the police is trying to shoot me down. Somebody tell me the reason that all the rage took me down. And everything I say, that's my damn word. Foul game, look at the way that they did Sam Hurd. Say we living the American dream, but ain't a nigga that I know in this American freak. Go. Heavy statement, count my blessings, never take for granted. Instead I take advantage, look out for your son, make sure I teach you table manners. The life, it ain't a damn thing for you. My uncle in the feds, he got 1,000 more weeks. And in 1,000 more days, I'll probably see Reese. But then again, he got a case in another state called D.C. And they don't wanna let a youngin' go, dawg. Label us ministers to society like we owe, dawg. Oh Lord, I can't take it no more. We throwin' rocks at the pen cause we so far. We keep that coke coming fresh up off that boat, dawg. 2 years later, nigga facing that RICO law. $50,000 for your lawyer, what it's gon' cost? End up with a public defender, nigga, that show law.
Live and direct, Brother Chairman.
Live and direct. Yes, sir. Yes, okay. I'm telling you, brother. We're going this in, sir. Okay, we're going this to the current queen, okay? I told my brother, and I say, sir, over here, Intellectual Radio. I was telling my sister, Comrade Queen Daphne, on that end. In other words, we're going double breasted, y'all. You know what I'm saying? We come from Free MR Radio. We are Intellectual Radio. We on, matter of fact, we on StreamYard. We on Instagram. So we'll be coming to you 210 cans of strength if need be. Because it is so intense. It is so intense. Yeah, so we got to come every which way, including Deuce. And we're coming to you everything, including the kitchen sink. Let's get locked and loaded for another episode of Free MR Radio here, Intellectual Radio. You know what I'm saying? We got the comrade, Green Daphne and the boys. This is a weekly episode. hosted by yours truly, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. and Robert Allen, a.k.a. The Lady of Rage. Let's get locked and loaded. Let's make history. Let's take history. Let's tape history. First and foremost, I'm self-critical for coming in a few minutes late. When we say quality time, I wait quantity time. Ball of confusion. Times a ball of confusion, y'all. This is the day and age when if you get a comic, or if you think you got a comic cold, you don't know if you should reach for the cold syrup or get dressed for a casket. These are serious times, y'all. You know what I'm saying? So again, we stakes are high. Cold red in regards to African anti-terrorism bill. Let's get straight into it. You know what I'm saying? Let us send our regards to the media family, and to the community, to the people. Renoko Rashidi, African historian, and in fact, we're looking forward to others calling in and give us some more details, the direct contact with the brother, you know what I'm saying? I was not fortunate enough, you know, to meet him face-to-face. Those I've come in contact with, you know what I'm saying, even some of our comrades who have hosted, in fact, our Central Committee in Oakland, a number of events with them, and those who I've come in contact with, or not come in contact with, you know what I'm saying, how he, the impact, not just their lives in a subjective way, but just, you know what I'm saying, in an objective way. And that's the deal, you know what I'm saying, because the deal is, a lot of times we talk about who we met personally, so on and so forth, but the deal is to make a dent in history, and make a dent in this system, make a mark in this, this machine that impacts to the point that transcends geographical, generational, and gender lines. In other words, the stakes are too high just to say, okay, that was my homie, or someone that you just knew in your immediate family, that we can leave some lessons that people can relate to, you know what I'm saying, that, again, that even if they take some, they change certain dynamics cosmetically and move things around, you can say, wait a minute, this is the core of what we're dealing with. This is we've seen how people dealt with this before. In other words, we lay an objective template, a hit that even if you say, well, I'm from Detroit, I've never been to Africa, I'm 14, I've never made it to that particular age, but there are consistencies in particular villainized community. Endures that have consistencies that we endure, and we try to grab those different dynamics that we can say, okay, how can we can we take to say, okay, how this can relate to our people in the past, present, and definitely the future. As late great Field Marshal George Jackson says, we are fighting for the unborn, living in the dead. We are fighting for the unborn, and living in the dead. You know, I said in the poem before, and I'm paraphrasing because even a lot of my own poems, I don't even remember the words, but when questioned, how does it, in regards to Chairman Fred, how does it feel to be sired by you, to be loved by the people, sweated by the you-know-who? Deal is, I learned lessons from his legend of what a man was supposed to be. And the deal is, as we say, a legacy is more important in your life. A legacy is more important in your life. You say, man, forget that. I'm just here for time. Because especially with the colonized community, because the reality is we are deprived of such conversations of generational wealth. And people say, well, you know, we just it's on us. We need to pass, you know, resources down. We face conditions like mothers putting up their homes, you know what I'm saying, taking out second and third mortgages, buying their sons and daughters out. We are faced with contradictions that, you know what I'm saying, that ever developing, whether it's term of war on gangs or war on guns or war on drugs, that, you know, just even be in contact to know who our offspring are, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren are, you know what I'm saying, not to mention such dynamics as the foster care system, various forms of chemical biological warfare, as we speak in real time, as we speak now. You know, I mean, literally, as of today, you know what I'm saying? I mean, what's to say, what, you know what I'm saying, those who will physically be alive, who will be familiar with what happened before them. That being said, let's get straight into it, y'all. Let's get straight into it. I know we have some callers in queue. Let's get right into it. You know, so we're talking about what's happening. What's happening with the indigenous community? Tiny House Warriors, comrades, Connors, and others who've been getting down in regards to the land question. Resistance ain't dead. Cats still fighting back from the black community, the red community, so on and so forth. We're talking about what's going down. So the phenomenal move, Cassandra Greeley, and the bus, Nicholas Lee, just for them all, they mobilized down right down to Logan prison, Logan concentration camp, the women's prison, I might add, you know what I'm saying, and move to mobilize that she in conjunction with the campaign for justice for Nicholas Lee, justice for them all, to go right there to the front door, right there to the barbed wire, right to the brick walls of Logan, take it right to the doorstep. I mean, right there where the wardens came out, where the state troopers came out, and with no compromise, we came to see about our people down here. Wasn't no sidetracking about where we, you know, what are they locked up for, you know, what's the situation. Came to see, in the spirit of, we said, the one prisoner, one contact, literally, up and ante, going right to them doors, right to the doorsteps. So right on. We see our brother kids be calling in. Hip hop fraternity. We don't talk about what that supposedly called in last week. We had miscommunication. Some miscommunication. But as you say, hey, you know, so you know we do it. You know, and giants ain't gonna trip on no minors. So we're gonna follow up with that. So with that being said, y'all feel free to call in. But yeah, we say Cub in the spirit of Black Panther Party Cubs. 929-477-3785. I'm on the phone right now, so you can't do the 708 number. But in the future, remember that number, 708-223-8953. Y'all tag somebody with this here. Y'all call somebody with this here. Let them know. Like and subscribe with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. on YouTube Live. Share it. Put the word out. What the programs we're doing. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is, y'all. Let's make history. Let's take history. So the Comrade Daphne, we got any callers in queue?
Free them all, Brother Chairman. We have our sister from Logan on the line. Free them all.
Wow.
Free them all. What's going on, Chairman?
Free them all. You can't make this up. That's what it is. Welcome. We just got to speak about Logan. I got another force. Just give me his up. He's online, too. I'll bring him in a minute. My brother C. Solomon. Let me get straight to this here. No further delay. Those who are not familiar with Logan, who made Illinois area. Those who were held captive in Illinois prisons and concentration camps, we recall when we hear about Logan, Dixon, Dixon was the co-ed with men and women. And this is something that sometimes people subjectively dismissed about the fact that the amount of women that are locked up, you know what I'm saying? But again, Logan, we just literally came from down there, and we got a call from you, you know, later that day. But what's going on? This is not your first time on Free My Radio. You've been talking about even the bill that's in regards to the parole, bringing parole back. But bring us up to speed. What's going on behind the walls?
Well, what's going on behind the walls is that it's the same shit, different toilet. They telling us one thing and doing another. They're promising us days, and they're not giving them to us. Truth and sentencing is holding a lot of us back from getting credits and doing the majority of our time. I'm under 85%, and I have to serve 85% of my time before I'm eligible for any type of days off my sentence. They only give them to people that are short-timers or the people that are going to reoffend to keep the doors open, to keep it revolving in and out. There are ways that we can help, though. Everybody can have their family go to RestoreJusticeIllinois.org, and we need people to start meeting with our state representatives and state senators and support these bills. Support your loved ones coming back into the community. There's a bill right now. It's for the state's attorney to resentence you. It just got passed, and there's a task force that's being submitted immediately. It's going in effect immediately, and it's for them to have retired judges, state troopers, all types of walks of life to advocate for you, even advocates to basically say that they support parole coming back to Illinois and trying to get us back to our community. You can have your state's attorney resentence you at any time come January 2022. They're doing it by the oldest case to the newest. We don't know what the criteria is, but it's basically for your rehabilitation while you're incarcerated and your background. What have you done with yourself while incarcerated? It is a law, so we're just waiting for it to take effect and to actually hit us. A lot of these laws that go into effect, they are not retroactive, meaning that it doesn't apply to people that are already incarcerated. So we just sit here. While they just did in 2019, they did parole for juveniles if you've caught a case and you're 19. They're eligible for parole after serving either 25% of the sentence or 20 years of a murder. So with us sitting here that have 20, 30, 40 years already under our belt, now we have nothing to look forward to because there's people that are under the old law, the 50% law. But then you have newcomers like me, I'm under 85%. So I'm eligible for parole if it will be implemented immediately.
Question. Two questions. What is this law again in regards to the resentence? What bill is this?
I'm sorry, are you breaking up?
What is the law that's being brought back up in regards, in particular about the state's attorney or the judge can resentence you? What is it? What is the name of the law? What is the name of the bill?
It's a law. It's a public act. It's right
public
here.
Act.
It's Senate Bill 2129, and it says that this initiative was led by the Cook County State's Office. And it provides resentencing shall reopen the defendant's conviction. Challenges would not be barred. So basically, they can give us less time. They cannot give us no more time. And it's a Senate bill.
That was my second question.
Law, but I don't have the public act. Yeah, it says upon recommendation of the state attorney.
Right on. That was my second question. So good. So just for clarity, so you go back color. We don't want to go on shooting the dice and come. You know what I'm saying? Come out. You know, craps. Now, being that Illinois. So is this for each respect? So each respective county, like Randolph County, Towson County. So it's just.
Mm-hmm.
So do you? The respective prisoners goes right back into the same county state's attorney, correct?
Correct. It'll go to whatever county you were
sentenced
to. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's not going
to
be the same state's attorney
that sentenced. Do you go back to the same particular? Is it the same particular state's attorney and judge, or is it open to the state's attorney's office in general?
State's attorney's office in general. They can't send us to the same state's attorney that locked us up because, of course, they're the ones that had it out for us regardless. So with that, they have to have, like, that's where the task force comes in, where the retired judges, the retired police officers, those are the people that are going to be on that committee that are basically going to look at people's cases, and that is what we need. We need people like our listeners, we need the supporters, we need everybody that is for everybody coming back into the community to help us because all you're doing is warehousing us. That's it. And it's costing Illinois taxpayers a lot of money.
While this is going on, is there a way we can still push that we have some actual civilians, some people, I mean, you know what I'm saying, like similar to like the fight on the police accountability, because, I mean, that we always face that contradiction about, you know, placing the same police and law enforcement officials on the boards. I mean, as Franz Fanon say, accept the concessions but not compromise our principles. Can we still, is there someone we can still mobilize, like put it, you know what I'm saying, like an ad note, we push it for Senate Bill 2129, however, but we want to push also for some civilian, for some community accountability. Is there something we can also, ease up in the legislation?
That's how we get involved. That's how we make sure that we are the ones that are on the committee. Our families, our loved ones,
okay,
are the victims of the cases that no longer pose a threat. Like, we no longer pose a threat to the victim.
Yes, yes. Okay, but that's going to, okay, we're still the state's attorney, or the judge is hearing it. I'm talking about, like, the deciding factor, and we want to also push for some people, some civilian or people to be on a board. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay,
I mean,
that's
we haven't gotten
saying.
That
so
far. I don't know
push,
how we would
go
get
with
on
this.
The board.
Yes.
I don't know how we would get on the board. All I know is that when you go to Restore Justice Illinois in the Illinois Prison Project, that they have people that are on those boards and on those committees.
Yes.
Those are the people that we need to reach out to, that those are the people that support us incarcerated.
Right on. We go with that, and I recommend we also send to the respective state legislators, state representatives, also pushing for, though we'll take this concession, I push for our principle that we have, that we that also, that the people, that we have civilian, you know what I'm saying, civilians and people from the respective communities, not just, you know, voting on it, but actually on the board, making the decision, making capacity.
Correct.
Right on. Right on.
And then we also need people, like right now, the paroleillinois.org, you know, that's the organization that they reached out to you last time I called, and they were telling you, you know, everything about parole. Well, we need people to support them also, because those are the people that are pushing for us to get parole back to Illinois. In November, we go back to the legislation, and they're gonna vote, and we need that lady, her majority vote. She's the majority leader. I can't remember her first name, but it's Greenwood. I know that's her last name, and she is the majority leader. So we need her, so we can get the support of the rest of the legislature.
Gotcha. Right on. Gotcha. Okay.
And they're getting ready to take the sex offenders out.
Gotcha. Say it again.
You know, they do those carve-outs, and they take out the sex offenders, or they take out some Class X felonies. So the last time that they met, mm-hmm. they wanted to take out the sex offenders. And if it would affect a couple hundred people but help a couple thousand people, why not? And then we'll work on something else for the group of people that it doesn't affect.
I got you. Another question I want to ask you real quick. Before you roll on reiterate those names again, that bill again also, but just what was the response to the people coming down there to the prison to
you have 1 minute
the
left.
Caravan to come to can you hear me?
We were put on lockdown. We didn't know what was happening. I appreciate y'all coming out. That was great support. It's always love when somebody from the outside is showing support and showing love to us incarcerated, because a lot of times we forget about the people that are out there because we don't get to see it. So I encourage anybody that has a loved one locked up, reach out to them, write them, send them some pictures, send them an email, because that support can change their whole day.
That on. We commend you for your consistency. Anything else before we lose the call? You any more updates or contact information you want to give us?
You want my contact information?
Come on with it. We had a one person, one contact campaign, or anything you want people to, whatever you want to get put out.
Thank you for goodbye.
Okay, we got him direct, y'all. That's direct from behind the walls, y'all. Direct from behind the walls. We making this, we taking this, and taping this, y'all. That's what it is, y'all. We just that's update from the women's prison down in Logan. We just came from down there. Again, Senate Bill 2129. Before we leave out, we will reiterate some things we want to put in there. You know what I'm saying? Some other points. So, Conrad, I know I got Ken online. I guess C online. Bring us up to date on this caller. Call in Q.
Free them all, Brother Chairman. Brother Ken is on the line. Free them all.
Tell you right. Right on, free
them all. What up, brother?
You my what brother. How you feel? Welcome to them all radio. Yes, sir.
Hey,
you
hey,
loud
hey,
and clear.
Hey, hey. How you doing?
Good
How you doing, brother Fred?
I'm well on this end. I'm well on this end. For the, again, just want to officially welcome you to Free 'Em All Radio, you, Hip Hop Fraternity community on that end. I know, well, I don't want to draw any foregone conclusions that the people know where y'all based at. So, and, you know, even who you are, you know what I'm saying? So I want to open the doors, open the microphone up for you, you know what I'm saying, to, you know, get straight in with the introduction. You know what I'm saying? The airways are open. We had some electrical problems earlier, but we live and direct in the spirit of making history, taking history, and taping history. This is a weekly program we put on, hosted by myself, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., and Robert Allen, a.k.a. the Lady of Rage. I was fortunate enough to touch down with you when I was in Atlanta a few weeks back. And when nephew Young Bleed had called me last minute, a lot of information in regards to the music industry, you name it, you know what I'm saying, a lot of information. So I just want, you know what I'm saying, just again, welcome you and open the doors, you know what I'm saying, let us know who we got here. I know people may be familiar with you in different arenas, different eras of time, you know, but if you can, give us a background, who we have online with us tonight, and just, you know, give us, bring us up to speed, what you got going on right now.
Well, you know, I'm originally from Chicago, 4759 South Federal, you know, grew up in the Robert Taylor's, then eventually moved out to 103rd and Jeffrey the Miners, and born Cook County Hospital. You know, I had my first run in at the law at 14, you know, got attempted murder, which was, I was falsely accused, and eventually I beat that case. It took me 3 months to beat it. I was the youngest person ever in the Cook County jail. They had me there for 3 months, you know, as a 14-year-old kid. And then after that, when my father said that we had to move to Milwaukee, so we moved to Milwaukee. And once we moved to Milwaukee, that's when I began a life of crime, in and out of, you know, reformatory school. Eventually, you know, I got into the pimp game at 16, became a notorious pimp, and eventually, you know, over a period of my career, I became the number one pimp in the country, and we did this documentary called Pimps and Hoes Down. After that, my father ridiculed me and cursed me out and said, "You're a damn fool. Why would you get on TV and expose yourself?" And at that point, I ended my career, and I just stopped doing that, and I went from the ghetto streets to the executive suites. You know, I ended up writing two books, one called The 48 Laws of Game, another called The Art of Human Chess, and now I'm a literary agent for the same company I wrote books for. I just signed Boosie, I just signed Ice-T, and I signed Corey Wise, the guy from the Central Park Five. We was working on the book of Master P.
Yes.
And so, you know, basically, you know, all of that, you know what I'm saying? Then, you know, you get this new person, you know, who a lot of people, you know, when you say, you know, your name Pimpin' King, you know, it intimidate people. But when you change your life, mm-hmm. you know, people don't want you to change your life, you know, but if you don't change your life, they say, look at it, he's a bad guy. And I remember I was I think about 97 years ago when I first changed my life, and a guy from King of New York, you know, he was asking me, you know, why would you change? I said, if I walked up into the studio with a pistol and I told you to break yourself, you know what I mean, you would say I'm a ruthless criminal. But now I'm walking in here with a book, and I'm walking in here with DVDs, and I changed my life. You don't even want to give me credit for changing my life. So a lot of people, you know, they despise the change. You know, irrespective of, you know, they want you to change, they despise when you change. So, you know, now we're doing the Hip Hop Fraternity. That's the event that you came and spoke to, and we thank you. You spoke so eloquently. You know, you gave the brothers a good education, told them about your father, and so on and so forth. I really appreciate you, Fred, Chairman Fred. So now we have the Hip Hop Fraternity, which is an organization which is considered a black think tank. I'm the CEO. I got Ice-T on my board. I got Mystic on my board. I got Maybach Music on my board. You know, we got a lot of influential people on my board. You know, a lot of people that have espoused us, like Lil Boosie, Tila, Young Bleed, he's a member. We got Goody Mob. They all a part of the organization. You know, we got about 1,000 strong in Atlanta. We got about 3,000 strong worldwide. You know, basically, you know, our concept is, you know, our mission statement is love, peace, and respect. You know, and we want to bring all of the people in the industry together under one umbrella. Everybody works simultaneously for one common cause, and that's the upliftment of fallen humanity for our people. You know, a lot of our people, you know, we have been, you know, blindsided, we have been raped, pilfered, and robbed, and everything taken from us in the music industry. Like I often give the analogy, Brother Fred, I say, you know, if I walk up to you, I give you $100 bill, and I say, Fred, give me a record deal. You say, okay, Ken, I'm gonna give you $15 out the $100. I'm gonna keep $85. That's inappropriate behavior, but that's what our young people do all the time. They get 15 cents on a record. So that means if they sell 15% on the record, if they sell 1 million records, they're gonna get $150,000. They're captives, you know, because they slave masters. They captives, you know what I'm saying? They get $850,000. You see what I'm saying? So, but if I walk up to you and I say, hey, go $1,000 for a Rolls Royce that you paid $300,000 for, you say, man, get the hell up out of here. But if you get, you'd be better off taking $1,000 because you took $1,000, it'd be a better percentage if you took the 15% because you only lose $299,000 with the deal with the record label. You're losing $850,000. So, you know, we're just trying to get brothers on the proper course to teach them about blockchain, teach them about NFC technology, trying to teach them about ASCAP and BMI and about publishing, you know, and how to set up an LLC, how to, you know, get your copyright, how to get your license, and just various things that they need to know and know that they are entrepreneurs. They are businessmen. You know, you are businessmen. Once you enter the record industry, you enter to the record business. So you have to have comprehension. So you can't get nobody out the projects and expect them to understand all of this legal lead and this jargon, you know, and this jurisprudence from these lawyers from Harvard. You see what I'm saying? So at the hip-hop fraternity, we teach them that. We teach hip-hop facts. You know, we hook them up with producers. We hook the producers up with DJs, and everybody work collectively. When we go to the club, we mob to the club 200 deep. That way we can change the bottom line of that club. So we're spending $30,000-$40,000. If we only spend $100 a piece, we're still spending $30,000. Well, that club had to play our music. You know what I'm saying? We force the clubs to play our music. You know, we go places and, you know, we use our strength, our numbers, in order to control the entire hip-hop industry. You know, record labels call me all day, like, what's going on? What's going on? We hang up on them because we know what they want. They want our culture, but it's our culture, so it's our call, and we want brothers and sisters to come back to the original understanding of knowledge of self, you know, to get back into the Mansa Musa mentality. Because, you know, brother, everybody talk about Black Wall Street. But let me tell you something, Brother Fred. Hip-hop is the new Black Wall Street. The GDP of Black Wall Street was $2 billion. Kanye West is worth $6 billion. He's worth 3 times the value of a whole entire community. But they don't praise Kanye West. They praise Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because they killed the Negroes. You see what I'm saying? That's what they said. We killed these Negroes. You know what I'm saying? They praise Martin Luther King because they killed him. They'll put a street on every block with Martin Luther King because they killed him. But they won't put nothing with Jim and, you know, your daddy on there. You know what I'm saying? They won't put nothing, you know, with Percy Jr. They won't put nothing with Brother Charles Drew. You know, brother. You know all the brother, Mansa Musa. You know, Sunni Ali. You know, Kwame Nkrumah. You know, it's a lot of people that they don't praise because they didn't control, you know, or they didn't kill. So anything they control and kill, they push into our face. So here at the Hip Hop Fraternity, we're teaching brothers that the new Black Wall Street is hip hop. Black hip hop has created more millionaires, more billionaires than any other entity or any other a business, you know, known to mankind.
You mentioned a few times. I want to touch back on what you before we leave. NFC, ASCAP, LLC, copyright, EDP. Before I go into that, I just wanted to comment on something that I think a lot of times people have a reactionary assessment of ourselves, other people, and just history in general. You know, the people, you know, they hear about certain individuals. They hear his name, Pimp Again, you know, from back in the days, and just think it's just you know, like he just individual popped, it disappeared out of a vacuum, you just brought to my attention, I'm sure to many people's attention, about you know at the age of 14, you being tried, you know, sitting here in infamous Cook County, and everything is political. And Cook County Jail still to this day is the largest county jail in the country. And at one time per capita, recent history, large per capita, large amount of black people per capita. And I recall even some bills some years back, maybe in 1997, when there was a push to have all juveniles make sure they are separated from the adult population, for the exception of Cook. And like earlier today, earlier during the show, I mentioned other counties like Randolph, Thompson. These are counties in which, you know, the population is more of a white population, and that's something that, you know, saying, that objective that I mean that his that I mean of your life, you know what I'm saying, that should be put in context. I was just watching a piece with some guy named Maurice DeMet. I forget his name. He played with Carlos Santana. He was homeless, and so they talked to him, and a news reporter came across him in the Bay Area, and they brought him back, and they didn't believe he knew Carlos Santana. Then they brought Carlos Santana to him. He said, "Oh yeah, this guy told me about jazz, everything," and they was talking about how did he fall off? How did he become homeless? And he's going through the whole thing about, going through the struggles he's going through. But something I don't think a lot of people caught. Carlos Santana said, well, he got taken to San Quentin. He got locked, and he said we didn't have no contact, and he don't know what happened to him. Field Marshal George Jackson of the Black Panther Party said, no man, I'm gonna take a liberty of paraphrasing, no man, no woman leaves that place, unaffected. And now, the dynamics, not until we hear these stories about people, somebody get out in Detroit after serving 37 years, 45 years, we be like celebrating and say, oh, that's good. But negating all the contradictions from, being snatched up during your reproductive ages. And just even, we had a case in Chicago where a juvenile, 16 years old, was taken in in the juvenile detention center. And it was documented. They had shot him up with so much medication that it took his sperm count down from 1,000 to 0. And so, you come out of there, especially at 14 years old, we know the horror stories that Cook County, has been known for, but to come out of there with your alive, and let alone your sanity.
It was in the 70s, Brother Chairman. But, I'm going to tell you, I'm sure how good God was. There was a brother named Finney. He was a vice lord. And a brother named Black. They had wars. They used to go at it. And every time, I don't know, man, God must have looked over me. And my brother was in there with me. He was 16. And every time they would go to war, they would tell us to go on out, and we was in Division 6. They said, go in y'all little room. So we'd go in our room, and they'd be beating each other with mops and stabbing each other and everything. And they protected us, man. They knew that we was kids, and they knew that we was young. They ain't trying to numb that funny stuff or nothing, man. It's just sometimes, man, God could be over your life. But God put me in there because that was an experience that I need, because sometimes what we go through, we grow through. If you ain't humble, you're going to crumble. Sometimes your ego could be your worst amigo. So, what I learned from the situation was that I learned that, even though I didn't get out of it quick, but as I got older, I learned that God got me. That the man upstairs, whoever you want to call him, Allah, Jehovah, whatever his name is, Hebrew, he got me because I supposed to have been dead in that penitentiary. At that time, it was really bad. You had the Latin Kings, you had the Christ, so everybody was warring at that time. That's when the gangs was really starting to populate, and everybody was trying to find their identity. So it was a lot of gang banging at that era and time. I was in, the worst jail in the world at that time. But you got to understand that. You touched on something very interesting. America is 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's incarceration. In terms of eligible African-American men that can go to penitentiary, it's only 6%. If 6% of us eligible go to prison, we 13% of the population, so we north of 40 million. But we got 2.5 million people in prison, and out of 2.5 million people in prison, 51% is of that 6%. So how can 6% of eligible people to go to prison be 51% of the prison population? And America is only 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's incarceration, so that means 12.5%. of us is incarcerated more in America than in the entire world. When I went to prison back in the 70s, when I first went to Cook County Jail, it was about 300,000 people incarcerated. Now we can see it's 2.5 million people. And then we look at Correctional Corporation of America. We look at what they're doing over there with the, you know, the privatizing the prison and the prison being on the New York Stock Exchange. We know that the 13th Amendment is clearly in effect, because when you look at the 13th Amendment, it said the slave was abolished except for one duly committed crime. Now, you know, I told you, I packed stuff up under the Honorable Noble Drew Ali. So in the Morristown Temple, we talked about Dred Scott, right? So when I look at the Dred Scott case, and I look at how, you know, they put them back into slavery, but what they never tell you about it. I know you didn't been to court. I've been to court. Whenever you go to court, if the person that incarcerates you, or the person that's, you know, ruling over you or adjudicating over you, if they got any conflict of interest, they're supposed to, you know, recuse themselves. So all of the Supreme Court justices that ruled against Brother Dred Scott were all slave owners. So if we was to take him back to trial, he would be acquitted. So you know what I'm saying? It's just stuff like, look at the $20 bill. You know, the $20 bill got Jackson. We killing each other for Jackson, but Jackson was a slave owner. We killing each other for them George Washington, but these were slave owners. So it's the subliminal. It's the hidden message that is showing us. It's white supremacy and systemic racism that's keeping us down. That's why we can't, you know, we can't morph into something successful. You know, but me, what I did was I dissected everything. I went and I looked at all of the, you know, the pitfalls. I looked at all of the things that put me in the condition that I am. You know, I mean, I studied myself. Yeah. I studied knowledge and stuff. And then I was able to figure it out that it's all white supremacy. You know what I'm saying? And white supremacy is a religion, as Brother Tariq Nasheed always likes to say. It's a religion. And what makes it a religion is that, you know, if I say I'm superior of you, then I got to do everything in my power to make sure that I'm inferior. I got to let you live in dilapidated homes. I got to put you in projects. I got to incarcerate you. I got to do all these things in order for my concept or my religion of white supremacy to work. Just like in order to be a Christian, you have to be crystallized. You got to believe in Jesus Christ. To be a Muslim, you got to believe in Muhammad, salallahu alayhi wa sallam. You know what I'm saying? You have to believe in these things. Well, they believe in white supremacy. That's their religion. So therefore, as long as you white supremacy exists, you're going to continue to see these crazy laws, these Rockefeller laws, the laws that the 85%. Nobody should do 85%. Of their time. I mean, that is ridiculous. You know, if you call correction means you're going to correct them. How can you be a correctional institution, and how can you practice rehabilitation when you ain't rehabilitating nobody? You know what I'm saying? When you constantly putting people in precarious situations, you know, you furthering, you know what I'm saying, their situation. And that's what we see. And that's what we attack at the hip-hop fraternity. And if people want to know what the hip-hop fraternity, the best way they could do is go to thehiphopfraternity.com, and that explains everything. We got Instagram, everything on that. So that's what I'm doing, brother. I can't get brothers to join the Black Panther. I can't get them to join the Nation. I can't get them to join the Powder House, you know, because they always talking about, man, you know, I ain't with that, or I ain't with this, I ain't with that. You know what I mean? They always look at our organization as negative. That's really positive for them, because the European, you know what I'm saying, our counterparts, our adversary, our diabolical enemy, then taught them that the Black Panthers was something negative. When y'all was feeding kids, you know, for school, you know, breakfast. You had the back-to-school breakfast program, which, you know, most kids, that's when they learn the best, when they eat in the morning. You know what I'm saying? They need breakfast, the nutrients. You know what I mean? That's what y'all was about. You know what I'm saying? Y'all had a right to bear arms. You know what I mean? The right to bear arms is in the Constitution. Y'all didn't violate no laws. But they were scared to death of y'all because of what y'all represent in this color of your skin. You were defying white supremacy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, they don't want to go to church because they say everybody in the church is jackrabbit preachers. You know, they pimping their mama. You know, they don't want to go to the Nation of Islam because they don't want to wear bow ties. They don't want to, you know, get out there and hustle like the brothers do. You know what I mean? Sell papers and push the narrative of the Nation of Islam. And they don't want to become Muslim because they want to grow a beard. They want to wear a dashiki, or they don't want to wear a kufi. You know what I mean? So that, but hip hop, they want to wear their pants down. So we let them do all that. Come on. But once they get in here and we get them in our offices, then we start teaching them. Then their pants start to come up. Then, you know what I'm saying, those negative attitudes start to come out. They start to quote business. You know what I'm saying? They get to learn what the LLC is. You know, so that was my way, you know, because I've been a part of all those organizations, except for the Black Panther. That was my way of bringing the young people in through hip hop. Because I noticed when your program first came on, you know, you played Tupac. You know, we played a lot of hip-hop before you even came online. And that's where our young people is at. They in the hip-hop community. So that's why we started the hip-hop fraternity. You know, a fraternity is a frat. You know, it's just a frat house where brothers can link up under that auspices, you know. But That's really, you know, what we all about, man. And that's why I wanted you to come and speak, because see, I don't have no intimidation, because you know, I tell people like this. When you look at the hip hop fraternity, look at it like that movie with Eddie Murphy, Traded Places. When Eddie Murphy traded places with the dude, right? He was in there stealing silverware. And the white man said, "Hey man, what are you doing?" He said, "All this is yours." So that's how it is with the hip hop fraternity. You ain't got to come and steal members. If everybody in the hip hop fraternity joined the Black Panther, that's what I want them to do. You know, if everybody in the hip hop fraternity joined the Nation of Islam, that's what I want them to do. We are not intimidated or fearful of any organization. That's why I invite all organizations and all people to come together, and let's be an African-American think tank, and let's come up with solutions and conclusions, you know what I'm saying, for the problems that are pervasive in our community. You know, that's where I'm at with it. You know what I mean? I don't trip. You know, I'm a Moorish American. You know what I'm saying? But I'm around Chris Bloods, GD, Vice Lord, Black Panthers every day. You know, and everybody got their perspective lifestyle. And I have no qualms with that whatsoever. But I do believe that if we come together, we practice group economics, you know what I'm saying, we create a 360-degree of participation where we support each other through group economics and group politics, and we shop with each other, and, you know, we let our money, you know, bounce at least 8 to 10 times before we leave our community, then we as a community, no matter, irrespective of what you represent or what you, you know, your political persuasions, you know, geopolitical philosophies are, it won't have nothing to do with the movement. You know, the Masons do it, the Elks do it, the Pews do it. All I'm saying is that, listen, man, if these folks can come together, be lawyers, judges, carpenters, farmers, and they all up on the one auspices, hey, man, we could do it up on the hip-hop, because we all either Grandmaster Flash or we little babies. We all grew up on hip-hop. You know what I mean? We are the hip-hop boomers. You know, we that generation. So we all have a commonality in hip-hop. And unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, Europeans love hip-hop. Like I said, we only 6% of the population that can possibly buy music. So where is the other 94% of all this money coming from? You know, in that respect, we are winning.
That brings a question. We can draw a lot of, you know, it's still difficult for many people to see, you know, we can draw blatant correlations to chattel slavery, to the initial discussion we're talking about, that of the prisons, like, you know, mentioned about the 13th Amendment, where it blatantly states, you know what I'm saying, where, you can be dismissed from the servitude for the exception of those, you've been charged, you know, for a crime. And we can look at the shackles, we can look at, you know, we can look at even some of these, like Angola prison, you know, to this day, you know, one of, you know, in Louisiana. It's like, it's reminiscent of blatant chattel slavery. It's hip hop. With the, you know, with the videos, with the access to resources, and give us some of the court, like, and I'll be, somebody say, okay, this is, you know, they not that we get money mixed up with power and that of freedom. So I mean, just can you give us some of the insight of, you know, I mean, like, the terms, you know what I'm saying, like, I mean, how we still being, you know, subjugated, how we still being ripped off, and how we be still, like, especially with discussion about freedom of speech. Don't you say the wrong thing. There's a big thing going on with this cat, the baby, right now, you know what I'm saying? So what's the whole question, you know what I'm saying? So give us some dynamics about, resources. We've seen the heat come down on so many forces in the past, from Sam Cooke to Tupac. You know, you started talking about independence, and, you know what I'm saying, you started talking about, you know, your publishing rights, so on and so forth. What, give us some insight on that.
Okay, first of all, you know, the record industry went through several phases. Okay, I'm going to give you a brief synopsis on publishing. Okay, publishing, right? You know what I'm saying? You know, 89 years after you're dead, you know what I mean, you can receive publishing. So publishing is like me and you did a song, you was the producer, and I was a writer. We would get what you call a split sheet. You were on half of the music, I was on half of the music. And the publishing is the 6 slices. You know, you're talking about performance rights. You know what I'm saying? When you perform, you're talking about when, you know, they play it in the club, you get paid for that. When they play it in the jingle and the music, you get paid. That's publishing. That's not album.
Okay.
That's publishing. It's a big difference. And that's where the money at. So traditionally what has happened is that these guys have signed these contracts, and these contracts were basically garbage contracts. You know what I'm saying? So they assigned their life away, and they didn't know no better. So when James Brown and Sam Cooke and all of them, you know, they realized what was going on, they began to protest that. But it was so much money in it, and then at the time you had the mob and people like that involved in it, you know, that they literally would kill certain people. But now, today, you know what I'm saying, that doesn't exist on that level. You know, so what they do now is they offer us big change. They offer us $1 million. They offer us a Rolls Royce, and that's how they're getting us today. And, you know, the average kid from the ghetto, a Rolls Royce or $1 million is a whole lot of money. But what you don't understand, man, it's like, you know, I'll give you a better example. What's her name? Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton, y'all remember her, right? The white lady? Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
She wrote a song called I Would Always Love You. And Whitney Houston did it in The Bodyguard, I Would Always Love You. And she did a beautiful rendition of Dolly Parton's song. And the song went mega platinum. I mean, people was having it all on YouTube. People was, you know, they were just praising the song. And guess who got paid? Not Whitney Houston, Dolly Parton, because she owned the publishing. Every time somebody played that song on YouTube, Dolly Parton get paid. Every time somebody played it on Spotify,
wow, it was even talked about, even heard before, especially our community. Like Whitney Houston brought it back to life, but you said Dolly Parton got the bank off of it.
She got the royalties, because that's what ownership is. Like, for example, when Michael Jackson bought the Beatles catalog, they're publishing, all hell. When Paul McCartney needed money and Michael Jackson gave him $50-some million, it all hell broke off. Because let me tell you something about the Beatles, right? It was a guy, he was a drummer. And this guy here, he died. He died back in the 70s. But he had a son, and his son ended up on America Most Wanted. So they seen the son on Most America, well, identical name, and the lawyers just tracked the son down some kind of way. They hired a private investigator. And they said, man, did you know you got $3 million in publishing from your dad? $3 million. The man been dead. $3 million. Now, let me tell you why. You know where they put their money at? In a thing called copyright control. So when the money go in copyright control, it is billions of dollars in copyright control. So imagine how much interest Michael Jackson was getting. That's why he was spending $1,000 a month, $100,000 a month on these houses. Because the man was probably receiving $1 million a month in publishing. Just from the royalties, just from the interest of all the money that's in copyright control. There's a lot of people who were involved in those songs years ago, Brother Fred, that is no longer living. But the money's still calculating. See, that's why I said 89 years after you're dead, your publishing is still good. That's why it's usually aired down or is going to the estate. You know what I mean? And then, you know, you is inheritance. So, you know, that's why, you know, we teach at the hip-hop fraternity the importance. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and Congress have made laws to protect everybody. You know, look at what Prince did. Prince wrote slave on his head. You know, Nas asked Prince to do a song with him. And you know what Prince asked him? He said, do you own your publishing? And Nas said, no. He said, well, I can't do nothing with you. And everybody that wanted to do songs with Prince, he wouldn't do songs with nobody that didn't own their publishing. And what he was really trying to do, he was trying to educate them and say, man, this is where the money at. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we have to do.
Question,
and
kid.
No matter what. Huh?
Okay, you say Prince asked Nas, do you own his publishing? So, okay, so that's for clarity. That wouldn't be, you say, that wouldn't be for like one respective song. So, like publishing, is that a general... Like, you know, you say, I don't know about publishing,
song,
that includes, like, all your pieces?
Let me explain to you. So when you first get in the music industry, you form a publishing company, right? And then you register your music with this performance right organization, ASCAP, BMI, CSAC. And what they do is they go around the world and they track your music. If somebody plays your music in a jukebox, they collect all of that. They collect your money. So what they do, these performance rights organizations, they collect all of your publishing, and then at the end of the quarter, every quarter they give you, every 4 months, they give you a check, you know, and, you know, that accumulates. Now, if you did a song with Ken, you know, like me, I told you I've been on 40 million records, you know what I'm saying? I've been on Lil Jon album, 2 Short album, I've been on Jermaine Dupri album, I've been on 50 Cent album. So say, for example, if I forgot to register that song, even though I forgot, they still collect the money. The performance rights organization, they collect the money and they put it in copyright control. So it's up to me and my lawyers to go and do our due diligence and claim that money. So it's a lot of artists out here that probably got millions and millions of dollars in copyright control that don't even know it's it. But the way they can keep control, the way you keep, what's up on your money, you got to you got to register with these organizations. $50 to register with BMI, I think, is $150 with ASCAP. You know, and you register as a producer and a writer. You know, and you got mechanical rights and you got writer's rights. You know, and every time you do a song with somebody, if you're the producer and you're the writer, you own 100%. If you're a writer or you're a producer, you got mechanical rights, you own 50% of that song. And if you register and you got your publishing registered, then what happens is these people, they already know your song. You register it, they got codes in there. They got ways of reading and ways of tabulating and satellites that track this music around the world. And so they can calculate, how much money you got. So what's going on now is a new thing called blockchain. Now, blockchain would be considered the internet. You know what I'm saying? You can
do what you call What is it again? Say it again.
Blockchain. So blockchain is where a lot of the white country, western, and rock and roll artists is going, because the black folks then dominated hip-hop. So, but what they're doing is they get more money. So if you do a song on a blockchain, you do it. Say if I'm in Singapore, you will do what they call a smart contract, which would tell me how much money you want and how much per song. And then if I'm in Singapore, I want to play your new song. I like Big Butts. You know what I'm saying? I play that song, then I give you 50 cents a song. So if you do a million sales like that, you get $500,000. But under the record label, you only get $45,000 because they take in the majority of the percentage. If you go through streaming, you only get $2,000 because the streaming, the way they work, they say, well, look, it's too many records to calculate. So what we're going to do a guesstimation of what you get, and that's what they do. So, in order to beat the heat, you just got to be registered. You got to understand the business. You hire you a lawyer, never do anything without a lawyer. Understand what an escalation clause is, a de-escalation clause, and realize that the best record label deal you ever going to get is an independent deal. If you own everything, then, all the money will come to you. And I know a lot of people say, well, man, this guy offered me money. Anybody offering you some money in the music business is a banker. And a banker usually go anywhere from 5 to 10%. But with a record label, you're talking about, they taking 80%. They charge you 80% interest on a dollar. So you would never get out of that deal. You're always going to the hole owing the record label. You understand what I'm saying? So what we teach these kids is, keep your publishing. And even the guys, the smart guys, like the top flight rappers, how they get them is they let them own their publishing, and then they come back and they be like, okay, all right, Nas, you want to borrow $1 million, give me 20% of your publishing, and you can buy it back. So they give them 20%, and that's how they end up taking all their publishing. They eventually buy them out, over a succession period of time. It's all game, man. It's like these folks are
they have under duress of them cases. Are you locked up? Under the duress. Let me ask you another question. Okay, say an artist is just not getting hip to this now. Like you said, Sam Cooke and James Brown, they got wind. What was going on? So just to confirm this, it's retroactive. You can go back and say, okay, look, I want to go back and grab all the stuff, reap my benefits, what I've been having all the time. So you file with your BMI, ASCAP, what have you. It is retroactive. It goes back in time.
Well, basically, everything that you ever done is being registered. So you have money already in what they call copyright control. So if you did a song with 50 Cent and you never got your publishing, what they do, it's illegal for them to take that money. So they submit that money to the performance art, a performance rights organization. They submit it, they may not put no name on it, but they can't take the money because it would be considered, they call that the RICO Act. It's like if a bunch of people are knowingly committing a crime, then it's a RICO. It's a continued criminal enterprise. So they don't take the money, but they'll put the money in copyright control, and they'll bear the interest off the money. They'll be able to get the interest. But if you claim it, and if you do your due diligence, and you have somebody to track it down, and you figure out all the songs you've been on, and you submit that to ASCAP and BMI, they will retrieve that money for you over a period of time. You know, and some of these artists got millions and millions of dollars and don't even know it. Like, you know, like say for instance, if Usher would have did a song for Jermaine Dupri, and he just did it out of love.
Yeah.
Well, he did out of love or not, it still got to have a split sheet. They still split the differences on ownership of that song. They said Usher owned so much of the song, Jermaine Dupri owned so much of the song. So, you know, like I told you, what I did, I had a forensic account. And I went and I found all the songs I was on, and I registered my music, and I tagged myself on all of the songs I was on, and I was able to receive a substantial amount of money because I'm actually on these songs, you know, and I'm my own publishing company. I'm Ken Ivy Publishing, you know. So you know, the people that really messed up, we ain't trying to save them. You know what I mean? You know, we ain't trying to save them. We trying to save the new young people. Like I tell people all the time, if you sign with Jay-Z, Jay-Z ain't going to do nothing but go get you a deal, a distribution deal with Epic or with Atlantic Records. So you're not signed independent. You're signed to Jay-Z, who's signed to another nigga. So you're getting double dipped. You know, they're taking your money twice. You see, so at the Hip Hop Fraternity, we show people how not to get caught up in that. I always urge my artists not to go to a major. I always remain independent. Because you never know where the next hit might come from. You know, I mean, all these people do is, you know, they take something that's already in existence and they benefit from it. It's really a crime. You know, I mean, how can an old guy from Universal Records, you know what I'm saying, who live in Beverly Hills, say that he know music, you know, that he's the godfather of the music game. You know what I mean? He ain't making the music. He ain't in the hood. He ain't riding through getting shot at. You know what I'm saying? He ain't in the track, you know what I mean, selling the work. You know what I mean? So how he know about what you talking about? All he know about is that if you stupid enough to sign to me and you hot, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take all your money, I'm going to pimp on you, I'm going to put you on the ministry, put you on somebody else, I'm going to put you to work, and I'm going to eat all your money while your kids suffer. And what happens is with these guys is like, you know, like Lil Wayne. When Lil Wayne realized that he wasn't getting his fair share of the cake, he went at Baby. You know, he sued him for some millions of dollars. You know, but what these young dudes do is they become all, you know, shiny eye, and they'd be happy to be in a record business. They'd be happy to be around all these women and to be able to buy these cars and these clothes, and they forget the business side. And so what happened is, you know what I mean, once you go through that and you buy the Rolls Royces and the cars and you find out, man, I'm broke, then you got every nigga in the hood that you grew up with talking about, say, man, look out, homie. You know what I'm saying? So now you can't look out for your homies. They're looking at you stupid. You're selling millions of records. So now you want to retract and go back and try to correct the mistakes that you made. And like, oh, no, man, I should get this, I should get this, I should get that. Now at this juncture, you know what I'm saying, you got everybody in the hood, you know, thinking that you're a lousy dude and that you don't want to share, that you're stingy. And reality is that you broke. You know, all the women, you know, that you take care of, you know, it's crazy.
A lot of these are similar contradictions in the sports arena too, all right? Like, you know, in NBA, NFL, I mean, like, you look, what's the guy on Chicago Bulls? Reinsdorf and them, they couldn't run, you know, they couldn't run half a court. You know, with the resources that they reap off of that, you know, I mean, in every arena, sports arena also.
Well, you know, I mean, traditionally, right? Black folks have been, you know, they've been the talent. You know, and the Europeans have been the managers, you know, but since, you know, you got people like Jay-Z and Kanye, you know, African-Americans are becoming more smart and more aware of business. You know what I'm saying? The internet really helped people to understand a lot of stuff that they didn't understand 20, 30 years ago. So these guys, you know, they're not just taking these, you know, these flunky deals no more. A lot of people are waking up, you know, like I told you, like we said, the Hip Hop Fraternity, I tell all the brothers, you know, man, listen. You know what I'm saying? If we stick together, if we share each other videos, you know what I mean? If we producers and DJs deal with each other, you know, you guys are going to be better off. You know, eventually we will be the machine and we will outrun the major record labels because they can't exist without y'all. If we all stop giving our music away, we all stop being stupid, they come at us with deals that make a whole lot more sense. You know, they'd be coming at us as joint ventures and business partners instead of taking 85% and giving up. I mean, now 15%, that's like some Jay-Z money, you know, when, you know, like back in the day, you know, I mean, that's a good percentage if you consider it in the record business. Yeah. The average dude only getting 8%. You know, like I said, my first deal I did with Simon & Schuster as a publisher, as an author, you know, it's a crappy deal. But I came back and I ended up buying the ownership of my audiobooks. I own 100% of my audiobook. But I had to learn from that. You know, that's a whole different perspective, a whole different area. You know, it wasn't even music, you know, but I didn't know, you know, so everybody has to learn. You know, once I learned, you know, when I went to check for my royalties, they told me that I didn't have none. I made millions of dollars off the music, off the book industry. I was like, what's going on? So the next book I did it independently. The Art of Human Chess, I did it independently. Now I do the same numbers, but I keep all the money. You know, I own the audio of both of my books. When you go to audiobook.com, you type in my name, Pimpin' King, you'll see I own 100% of my audio book, 100% of my last book. Because I'm in the mind state of, you know, being an entrepreneur. I'm not in the mind state of having somebody, you know, take my career and put it in hand and just do what they want to do and treat me like clay and shape me how they want to shape me. You see what I'm saying? So that's what's important. What's important is ownership, you know, being producers and not consumers. You know, we have to become financially literate. We have to be. You know, like the Honorable Noble Ali said, you know, it takes finance to uplift a nation. This was in 1913. He was on to something. He was saying that over 100 years ago, it takes finance to uplift a nation. Essentially what he was saying is that we have to become self-contained. You know, if you look at the movie American Gangster, that's a good movie. You look at American Gangster, what made the unique, what people missed about the dude, what was his name? The main dude in American Gangster.
Lucas.
Frank Lucas. He was from the South. He was from the South, so he didn't have a Negro mentality. He didn't believe he could get on his knees and grow. You know what I'm saying? Them dudes in New York, they was believed that they had to get all their work from the Italian. But you don't got to remember, North Carolina, they had their own bus, they had their own cab company. You know what I mean? They had their own businesses. So he was used to, you know, being self-contained. He was used to being independent. He didn't want to get his work from the Italian. He wanted to go straight to the source because that's what they had to do in the South. And you notice all those dudes that became rich in the South, you look at them, they all got backgrounds in Mississippi. You know, that's ironic because in Mississippi, they had segregation. And segregation is when we as a people flourish
back. You're seeing some images of your people doing something.
That's what Martin Luther King said. This is what Martin Luther King said. He said, I believe I led my people into a burning house. What he was saying was that if we would have stayed independent, we would have stayed segregated. You know what I mean? We wouldn't have never believed that their hotels was better than ours. They would have believed that, for some reason, we believed that McDonald's hamburger was better than Miss Bessie hamburger, who we've been eating for the last 50 years, you know, up out of slavery since 1865. You know what I'm saying? We thought that, you know, that Mr. Roy grocery store, you know, because he had a roach or two, you know what I'm saying, running through there, that it was the worst kind of food. So we went to Kroger's. And we went to Kohl's, and we went to, you know, Jews, you know what I mean? And we killed our own community. And then once they seen how stupid we was, they see that we was giving away our GDP, then they built highways over all the hood. So now white people don't have to go through 63rd Street. They ain't got to go up Halstead. You know what I mean? What they could do, they could just go straight over the highway.
Rewind for a minute, King. You said giving them what? Did you say it again?
I said that they built highways.
Say it again.
I said they built highways.
You broke up one more time. You said give them the what? One more time.
I said they built highways throughout our communities, so white people don't have to stop.
No. You said no, but the GDP. You said give up. You said GDP a minute ago.
Oh yeah. The GDP. Yeah, we give up our GDP, our gross national product. You know what I'm saying? So we spend $1 trillion annually. So out of that $1 trillion,
right on. That's okay. That's right.
Only 2% that comes back to the
back. It was good pass. Yeah, no doubt. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So what we're saying is that is depleting us economically because that money is going into other communities. And like I said, you know, in every hood, you look at every hood in through Chicago, Milwaukee, it build highways throughout the ghetto, so people don't have to ride through the ghetto. Usually people have to ride through the ghetto, and if it's a black gas station, I don't care if you're black, white, green, spot, or dot. If you need some gas, you're going to get it from where the closest gas station is because you don't eat. And that used to be the way we used to prosper. You know, I mean, you know, white people used to stop at our community to get food. They used to come get hamburgers, everything that you know they need. They had to stop through the black community in certain instances because if not, they'd run out of gas. And so what they did was they built highways so the next community that you end up in is either in a Mexican community or in some other community. So that destroyed our community. We began to leave our community. But then what they did, they allowed the Jews, you know what I mean, no disrespect to the Jews, they allowed the Jews to come in our community. They opened up businesses. Then once the Jews left, the Chinese came, and they opened up business. Then the Chinese left, the Arabs came, and now we got the Indians in our community. You know, so everybody then benefited from the African-American community, except, and I ain't going to even talk about the Irish or the Greeks. You know, they've been there, too. You know, everybody then came and sucked the blood of the hood, of the ghetto, and moved on into their suburbs and live, you know, that picket, white picket lifestyle. So, you know, we can have the same thing because we are the richest people on planet, you know, in terms of, you know, GDP. We're like the third wealthiest people on the planet. You know, we're the 13th, I think it's the 8th or the 13th. I can't remember. It's been a minute since I looked at the statistics. But nonetheless, you know what I'm saying, we are very prosperous people. We got a lot of money. We got a lot of disposable income. However, that income is being spent like where they gave the, what you call them checks, the PPE or the stimulus checks. Everybody went straight into Baywood. They went into Oak Park, you know what I'm saying, and they went to those little malls out there and they spent all their money. They didn't stop on Madison. They didn't stop on 63rd. They didn't stop on Halstead. You know, so that killed those communities. Those communities, those businesses there are suffering. You know what I mean? You know, and particularly the African American businesses. You know, every time we get some money, we go straight to Lenox Mall here in Atlanta. You know, we got a Greenbrier Mall that got predominantly mostly African American business. You know, but you know, we see it continuously. We see it in every state. You know, you look at the killing. You know, all you got to do is go to Grand Theft Auto. That's where all the killings come from. They was raised to be killers from that game right there. You know, playing Grand Theft Auto. I refuse to let my children play Grand Theft Auto. Okay, what I got? I got nine kids.
Yeah,
I got eight kids went to college.
I would get a bomb. Grand Theft Auto, for those who not, hip to that, how realistic it is, and so they even got names. They got names of street organizations in it, like literally doing drive-bys. Everything is involved in it. You mentioned GDP a couple of times. Could you just expound on that for
The GDP is the gross national product. So what that means, basically, you know, that means that, you know, if you got $1 trillion, you know, circulate through that community, that's the GDP. That community is worth $1 trillion, which that's the GDP of us. We literally spend $1 trillion, you know, go through our hands annually. That's an annual prediction of $1 trillion. Out of that GDP, only 2% of that come back into our community. Our money bounced one time, and then it bounced out of our community. Other communities, you know, it bounces 8 to 10 times. You know what I'm saying? I think the Jewish community is 6% of the population, but own maybe about 60% of the wealth of this country. You know what I'm saying? They are very smart people. You know what I'm saying? You look at, say, for example, the Chinese. You know what I'm saying? You go into L.A., they got 31 Chinese banks. That's just in L.A. We, as African Americans, we got maybe three banks out of all of us. You know, I mean, you begin to see the disparities. You see little Havana. You see Greek town. You see Jew town. You know what I'm saying? You see little Italy. You see little Haiti. But you'll never see little Ghana or little Nigeria because we do not practice group economics. We do not spend our money with each other. We give our GDP, our gross national product, to other people. And the GDP of the African Americans, you know, back in during slavery was probably, you know, if you look at it, you know, from a wealth standpoint, was equivalent, you know what I'm saying? But the same amount, you know, money that we spent with each other back in 1865, you know, during the Emancipation Proclamation, when Abraham Lincoln so-called freed the slaves, we spent about 2% with each other. In 2021, we spent about 2% with each other. You know, back in during the time of slavery, it was about 50% African Americans in prison. In 2022, we got 50% of African. We have not changed one iota. Because we are actually doing the same thing we did in 1865, 2021. And the reason why is because there's so much money spent on social engineering and systemic racism. You know, people say the pipeline from school to prison. That is true. You know what I'm saying? Prisons do. I've been to prison. Schools do look like prisons. You know, some teachers act like prisoners. You know what I'm saying? So they prepare our children to go to jail. Then when you correlate that with, gangs like, you know, Grand Theft Auto, and you put drugs in our community. We don't own no planes. We don't own no boats. We don't own no ships. You know, how's the drugs getting? You put guns. We don't know how to manufacture guns. You see all these guns into our community. You know, this is by design. This is not an accident. You know what I'm saying? So this is what's destroying us. The biggest problem for our lawmakers and for our black lawyers and our black educators is to attack the laws, because the Honorable Noble John Lee said this is the nation of laws. Until we ratify the laws, until we, change and make amendments towards the laws, they can continue to do that. That's why you got so many brothers in prison, because of the 13th Amendment. It gives them legally a reason to incarcerate. That's why you got Angola. You know what I'm saying? That's why you got brothers picking cotton in Angola and officers riding around with horses with shotguns. The same thing in a slave movie. You know what I mean? Because they're legal slaves. Until we change that law and we make, even though you committed a crime or you made a mistake, you're still a citizen. And the citizenry is not affected by that. Then we would stop seeing the draconian acts of the prisons, and like the young lady was talking about, you know, none of them things won't happen. I mean, look, they close in our community. Then they do the Rockefeller laws, you know, so they do the crime bill from 1984 and crime bill 1992 with Bill Clinton. And these laws incarcerate these men for substantial long periods of time. And then these same people, you know what I'm saying, they do this. They say we need criminal reform. We need a prison reform. You the one that created the condition. Now you want to reform something. You're apologizing for what you did. It don't make no sense. And then the first thing they do, like, let me tell you something. I got to go. I really got to go. Let me tell you something. This is crazy. You see a hood, just go anywhere in Chicago, Detroit, and you see that hood depleting. And you see it being pared down. You could best believe in 15 years it's going to become a thriving community, because that's what they do. You know what I'm saying? They create economic stress in that community. People begin to move out. People begin to close. The buildings become abandoned. They buy the land. Then they go through eminent domain to move the remaining of the residents from the community. Then next thing you know, it's a Walmart. It's a Jew. And it's a Taco Bell. And a McDonald's in that community. That's the same thing they do with us. You know what I'm saying? You know, they allow us to kill each other. Then they allow us to sell drugs to each other. And then after we do all this stuff, then they tell our community leaders, these people ain't no good. And the first thing our community leaders say, yeah, you're right. You know, it's too many kids. They killed the innocent little girl. You know what I'm saying? So now the community gets on the side of the law. You know what I'm saying? And once they get on the side of the law, then they come in and they say, okay, well, we're going to cover the 85% law. You know, we're going to come in with the trigger lock law. And the trigger lock law ain't number double jeopardy. So what that means, me and you both in the prison. So if I get caught with a pistol, because I've been in the feds already, you know what I'm saying? They're going to give me 15 years of life because I'm ex felon in possession of a firearm, which is a federal law. You know what I'm saying? But the same law that they're using against me is double jeopardy, because it says that I have a right to bear arms. But when I do bear arms, because I've been in prison, it's contradictions. But at the same time, if you look at it, you know what I'm saying? It was all built out of their own design. They put the drugs in our community.
Yeah.
You know, if you put drugs in the community, you're going to create a lot of money. You know all of us how we is.
Yeah.
We're territorial. So if you're making $100,000 and I'm making $200,000, I'm going to make $400,000, I'm going to shoot your block up. You know what I'm saying? You're going to shoot my block up. Somebody going to get shot because bullets don't got names. And then what they're going to do, they're going to demonize. They're going to call it a war on drugs. And once they call it a war on drugs, they're going to demonize the community so bad, they're going to make you look so bad that the community is going to say, lock them all up. And then once they lock them up, And then they realize, I think you said something about, you know, a form of contraceptive is stopping the reproduction cycle. So now they can't reproduce their children. They can't really reproduce themselves. Now the women are talking about some, let my man out of jail. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, let my son out of jail. I made a mistake. I didn't mean to vote like that. I didn't mean to give y'all that much power. And they laughing, and they got six or seven vacation homes all over the world because they're making money off of your son in prison. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Indeed.
They do it to us all the time, and we fall for it every time.
Hey, time, motion, and spirit. Campbell, you right. Hey, give us the contact information for Hip Hop Fraternity, and we looking forward to seeing you in Chicago August 30th for the Chairman Fred Street Party, man.
Oh, man, I'm there, man, like swimwear, man. Okay, well, you can find me at thehiphopattorney.com. That's our social media. You can upload music. You can upload your videos. And, you know, it's like YouTube's or it's like Instagram, but it's owned and controlled by African Americans. It's our demonstration. If you want to find us on Instagram, it's at hiphopattorney.com. And those who are fans of mine who know me, you can find me at RealPimpTen on hiphopfraternity.com. And you go down my timeline, my photo line, you can see all the stuff I'm doing with Lil Boosie and with the community, all the positive things we're doing. And like I said, man, you know, if they want my books, they can go to audiobook.com and just type in my name, Ken, and all my books is up there for sale. And, you know, I mean, we basically, you know, if you're in Atlanta, and you want to come to the Hip Hop Fraternity, it's absolutely free, $50 out of my pocket. We feed you. You don't have to pay for no food, and you can perform for free. That has never changed. It remains the same, and our finances are totally out of my pocket. Brother Fred been to our facility. We have a 51,000-square-foot facility. We have four studios in there. We have a concert hall. We have a big meeting hall. We have a 1,500-car capacity parking. You know, we're the biggest facility in Atlanta. You know, we bring hip-hop artists, you know, every 2 weeks. You know, we got Mystico tomorrow. So if you're in the Atlanta area, you know, come to look up at the Hip Hop Fraternity on Instagram. You can see we have Mystico at our facility tomorrow. We had the Young Bloods. We had Brother Fred about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So we're always doing something constructive, positive. It's absolutely free. Nobody had to pay for anything. It's strictly out of my pocket. I don't have no help. I don't have no people loaning me nothing. I don't have no charitable organizations mess with me. And, you know, God bless me, you know, with a little money. So I'm blessing y'all with a little money back. And I'm paying for all this out of my pocket. We're stopping the violence. And I don't know if you've seen it, Fred, on Facebook. But if you go to my Facebook, Ken Ivy, you see we bought the Crips, the Bloods, the GDs, the Vice Lords, and we bought the BMF all on one stage. And them brothers made a peace treaty. So, you know, we also stopping the violence. We're bringing brothers together. You know what I mean? We're letting brothers know that the numbers are in strength. You know what I mean? We're telling them, you know what I mean, you know, how to make money in the music industry. So, you know, it's a lot of things we're doing, bro. Hey, man, thank you for having me,
brother. Y'all, we live and direct on Free Mall Radio, making history, taking this and taping history. Y'all got some contacts. I'm going to go to that page. I'm glad that we shared. Again, got to have you back on Free Mall Radio. You know, again, we're looking forward to seeing you August 30th, my brother, man. I was there a few weeks back. Shout out my nephew, Young Bleed, for giving me the call that day. Give me his to come on through there. It was very informational. I will be back, you know what I'm saying, on deck over there again. Again, look forward to seeing you, my brother. Yes, sir. This been a
man. Hey, man, you can have my
on.
Mic.
We got to have you back on deck with us, you know what I'm saying, real talk.
You can have my mic any day, man. Come on, man. The mic is open mic for you, man. You know, the brothers love you, man. I mean, they really love you, man. You got
I
to
love
come
him.
Back, man.
Look.
They love you, man. I can't wait
yes,
to
sir.
See you back in Atlanta, brother.
Love you too, brother.
Appreciate y'all, man.
Yes,
right,
sir.
Peace, love.
So you're right. Peace out. Love you, brother. Right on. We live and direct on Free Mall Radio, making history, taking this and taping history, y'all. Y'all heard, you know what I'm saying? Again, Ken Abbey. Some of y'all back in the days, y'all know Mr. Pimpin' Ken. He can get y'all some different social media websites. Check them out. We moving and grooving. You know, we on the countdown. Comrade, bring us up. I know we get a couple more calls in queue. Bring them on deck.
Hey, Ma, Brother Chairman, we have Comrade Connor, who's on the line. Free them all.
Free them all, Comrade. I know we're on the countdown. I know y'all be this ain't your first time, and definitely ain't your last time. You're going through it on that end. What's happening up there? You said a regular straight end. We did a quick post. I want to get another picture, but it was Tiny House Warriors. Those of you who just tuning in, or this your first time listening in, y'all, the work, the historical work we've been addressing in regards to political prisoners, you know, Linda Peltier, Orlando Wiley, you know what I'm saying, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Sunday Adekunle, your brother, sister down the street, to that the land question, you know what I'm saying, addressing, challenging the pipelines, you name it. But what's going on now? We know it's super intense. We may see, you know, various images. So, as a matter of fact, give us the social media where we can see it at directly in the beginning and at the conclusion of your summation. What's going on? Tell us what we can, because some footage of social media y'all been going through. Tell us what we can see that, then bring us up to speed. What's happening?
Okay, our social media is the official Tiny House Warriors, or my personal Instagram or Facebook under Kanahu, spelled K-A-N-A-H-U-S. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, where right now I'm contacting you from Tiny House Warriors. We're here on the ground, unceded, unsurrendered territory. Tsikwatmuk Uluh is the name of our land. It's 180,000 square kilometers of territory. We've never signed treaties with Great Britain or Canada. Here, any place west of the Rocky Mountains is pretty well no treaty with the federal government. And so to this day, Canada has been, I think, celebrated its 154th birthday. It's a baby country. And just recently, to give a background, they just unearthed and uncovered 215 children that the government of Canada is responsible for. They buried them, covered up the murders of these children in the Kamloops Indian Residential School, which was the largest of the Indian residential schools, the government-run schools that took the children away from their homes and communities and forced them, indoctrinated them into this colonial way. And the Indian reserves, if you add them up in Canada, will equal 0.2%. So we know who's going to be rich and who's going to be poor when Canada holds 99.8% of our land. The big picture here is that we're fighting for our land and self-determination. And by asserting our rights to our lands, we're stopping this pipeline. This pipeline is one of the biggest projects that we're facing threat from right now in our territory. And it's one of the largest. It's an Alberta tar sands pipeline that wants to pipe bitumen, a very toxic, one of the most toxic heavy crude oils, all the way from the Alberta tar sands, which is a landlocked resource in Alberta, through the Rocky Mountains, through our lands, all the way to Tidewater, to the Salish Sea out near Vancouver, and then through tankers from the Westridge Marine Terminal in Burnaby near Vancouver, through those inlets, tight inlets all the way down to the coast of Washington, Oregon, and to refineries in California. And so this is a massive project. It's like we know that wars are being fought over oil, and this is just another one, and we need a lot of attention on this, because on around a week ago, on July 23rd, Trans Mountain Pipeline moved in. Area that we've been occupying for thousands of years, but Tiny House Warriors have been occupying this specific site for 3 years. We have 5 tiny houses on wheels that we're using as a place to live, but also to assert our title and our right to exclusively use and occupy our lands and our right to self-determination. And we've been here for 3 years, 3 winters, 10 feet of snow here in the mountains. And they moved in with 50 white males with the Trans Mountain. Their security has, some of their top security has really high, extensive military background and police background, RCMP background, with RCMP for 30 years, one of them. And so they came in with a big police operation to put up fencing around this camp, but to really push us out and remove half of our barricade and safety blockades that we had on a road, Myrtle Lake Road. And blockades in this country really are significant in Indigenous resistance, because it's where the Crown, the government of Canada, faces off with Indigenous jurisdiction, Indigenous territorial authority over our territory, and it faces off right there at the blockade. And so it's a very symbolic position holding a blockade, and we kept that road, and on that day, half of the road, they tried to remove us, but it was women, and we were faced off with 50 white men that were there to really push us and take our whole home from us, because we created a village here. Practically, it has five homes, has a kitchen, has a whole separate kitchen unit, has everything that we need to maintain ourselves here on the land. They installed surveillance towers that have all state-of-the-art camera, night vision. They have even a megaphone on there that speaks to you if you get close. We had to install privacy curtains and fences and install our own high towers just to block access from them to see right into our homes, which is a one-bedroom tiny house. So they're looking right into our bedroom. So it's just a real invasion, and it's what invasion looks like for Indigenous peoples on our territory in 2021. They came with an injunction, a court injunction, stay 2x4, and they used that 2x4 as their weapon to come and take our land. And so this is still happening to this day. This is 2021. And we're asking for, you know, support. I think that the biggest thing that we have is our alliance with each other, and that we've both faced such brutal attacks by colonization and our oppression. You know, the exact same things that I'm hearing from the different speakers here are the exact same things that we're facing in our Indigenous communities here in Canada and all throughout Turtle Island, which is like this whole North and South America. And it's really going to be us that puts our minds together. Like he said, the other speaker said, they have think tanks. Like, we really need think tanks amongst our Black and Indigenous communities to really say what does solidarity look like? How do we start to even support businesses? How do we support our own economics? How do we support this freedom in that way? Because Canada and the American government is, you know, really trying to kill us and everything that we stand for. So we have to fight for our freedom, and we say land back, and the only way that we're going to get our land back is if we fight back. And we have to be very smart, because we're outnumbered and overpowered, and, you know, they have bigger guns here. We know what happens. One of the things, our elder Wolverine stood off with the Canadian government in 1995 at the Gustafson Lake standoff, and they shot off 77,000 rounds in an hour and a half at them, and that's what came out in the courts. They wanted to kill them, 16 Suquamish land defenders, and, you know, brought in APCs, set up landmines, you know, all around their encampment. And so this is the norm for the way that Canada deals with any type of natives that are talking about asserting their title as our sovereignty, taking back land in our nation. And we have every right to. There's no treaties here, which makes it a very unique stand in the world when we're talking about Indigenous rights, land rights. And, you know, what does self-determination look like, and how do we start to build our self-determination plans for our families and our communities and our nations, and then just the greater world? What does that look like for us? Like, I heard how much GDP, that's like $1 trillion. Well, we have that much or even more in the value of land, and we need support, and we need a real army to fight for our land. Because, and I mean army, not even just a physical army, but just the skill sets and the people that could assist Indigenous peoples with our land back. That includes rich white people that own large tracts of land.
Finding out, hold on a minute. Give me, what can we do? Who should we, let me just say this real quick. Contrary to, and I've said this before, contrary to the Tarzan movies and the John Wayne movies, the Indigenous community has been fighting back. The Black community has been fighting back. This comrade, you know what I'm saying, again, addressing issues ranging from political prisoners to the land question. In fact, you can go out in Pembroke, Kankakee, 45 minutes outside of Chicago, and challenging this conversation about the pipelines. And that's something people should be aware of, the impact, the detrimental impact it has on, you know, saying, on communities. And we see what this country has done. And its counterparts, you know, Canada and other parts, with their, you know, I mean, these gangsters, what they do to them, I mean, for oil, you know what I'm saying? I mean, for oil, blood, until it's real talk. And so, get working with in solidarity. Who can we write? What can we, you know, give us your contact, that page again? How we can we show, you know, we can really up the ante with this solidarity, comrade? How can we do it?
Okay. TinyHouseWarriors.com. Check it out. Share our content. I'm going to be there on August 29th and 30th in Chicago. I would like to meet everybody that wants to meet up and do work together. So, like, I'm looking forward to being there and meeting up with everybody that's saying they're going to be there. So, see them all.
Right on.
See you there.
Y'all always there live and direct. You know what I'm saying? We got people coming from all over. We got Comrade Connors going to be on deck. And King going to be people coming from all over the world. Going to be August 29th and August 30th for the Chairman Friends Street Party. Comrade, again, keep us posted. You know, so we got your back like a backpack, and your chest like a bulletproof vest, and the spirit to continue. Again, continue solidarity. Revolutionary love, revolutionary respect. You know, so keep us posted. Y'all make sure y'all, you know, so y'all tap in. Share her posts. Share those posts when the comrades are in. Again, the spirit of solidarity. Keep us posted. Keep us posted, comrade. Come, she did that? Did we lose her?
Yeah, free them all. Free them all.
Oh, free them all. Okay, I know you're going to be cutting something about another minute or something. Any closing comments for you? Or any closing comments?
I just want to, like, say thank you for having me on here. It's always a pleasure and honor to continue to do the Rainbow Coalition work with you and everybody. I'm just glad that we can connect and always just build in solidarity, Cooks Gem.
Right on. We honored and we humble, comrade. We see you on 29th and 30th. We're going to be keeping in contact even before then, you know, so again, we'll keep in contact. Keep us posted. Right on. Free them all.
Free them all.
We live and direct, y'all. We're about to close out to the comrade. I know I had brother C online. He posted up there on somebody that was locked up. See if you still online. Call, give us a call next week. So the comrade Daphne, is Solomon C, is he online?
Free him all, brother Chairman. Yes, he is.
Come on, get in. Come on, real quick. See, are we pushing it? They're going to cut us off in another one or 2 minutes.
Free him all, brother Solomon.
Yes, huh? Yes, I have a great sister, Demetrius Champion, on the line. She's representing the good brother, Emmett Wright. He's been incarcerated wrongfully for, I think, like a double murder or something. It's a juvenile, and we're trying to give him some exposure. Chairman, go ahead, Demetrius.
Yes.
Welcome. Welcome to the
Can you hear me?
Right on. We hear you loud and clear.
All right. Okay, yes, so my brother has been locked up for 24 years, Solomon said, in the Galesburg Correctional Center, and he is coming up for his clemency here on September 7th in Chicago, and on the 7th, he'll be there. He'll be in courtroom 931-31.
Downtown court, federal court? What comes here in the hell then? Thompson Center? Demetri? Hello, sister? She there?
Yes. I'm here. I'm so sorry. Can you hear me?
Okay, the Thompson Center, where is it going to be held at?
Thompson Center, yes. On September 7th in courtroom 9-31 at the James R. Thompson Center in Chicago, Illinois. Any supporting letters can be sent out to a couple of addresses here in Winnebago. Reach out. They could reach me at DemetriusChampion@gmail.com. And we had just been working on a lot of different things with his clemency and some of the new laws that had passed that he was able to get in. Wanted to share that information with your audience, such as the law, the Senate Bill 2333. This law is allowing anybody who has served over 20 years reentry back into Illinois. That Governor Pritzker just passed, piggybacking on what your first caller was talking about. But definitely a lot of different things has happened that has given opportunities for brothers and sisters to be able to get back in court and get out especially if they've been there for a while or were juveniles, like they said about the science that came out with the brain and everything like that. But this is just information that I feel like, you know, people need to know about, but also wanted to just say that if there was any support as far as supporting letters or anything that anyone would be able to send in, then they could just reach me at that Gmail account and I can give them that forwarding information. I know your show went a little longer with your callers, so I just didn't want to take up too much time.
No, no problem. No, can you spell the name out for us, the Gmail account, the Gmail? Can you spell it for us?
Absolutely. It is Demetrius Champion, no dots, no spaces. It's D as in David, E-M-E, T as in Tom, R as in Robert, I-U-S, as in Sam, champion at gmail.com.
It's September 7th. Are we going to contact you and also write letters of support? Are we specifying, are we distinguishing this a clemency based on innocence, or are we just saying based on clemency in general?
It's clemency based on the sentencing due to the...
He was a juvenile when he was taken in, correct?
Yes, correct. 17.
Okay. So that's September 7th. September 7th courtroom. I apologize. Go ahead.
9-31 is the courtroom at the Thomas R. Center.
I can't recall the address right now. What's the address? Do you know Thomas Center address?
Thompson Center address. I have all of this information, absolutely.
Okay. What's his name also? What is his name?
His name is Emmett Wright, Chairman.
Emmett Wright. E-W-M?
Yeah, Emmett X.
Two T's?
Yeah.
It's at 100 West Randolph Street in Chicago. Yeah.
Right on. That's it.
And it's WRIGHT.
We need warm bodies, y'all. We need people down there September 7th. They might have
Also, Brother Chairman, the brother, he belongs to the Nation of Islam now. Over 20 years, the brother changed his life. He's a great speaker. He's a great motivator to the youth. He's been demonstrating in the prisons, man, positive movements amongst all the people. The guys in the jail should know him. He's very known. I met him in Rockford, and he was a very dear brother of mine. And he was on point at every level. He went down to juvenile, and I was one of his leaders. So that's why he reached out to me, and that's why I reached out to you, my brother. If you can reach out to any prominent brothers that's in the nation, you know what I'm saying? This brother is like that. He puts the nation like no other in that state prison system. So please reach out to this brother because he needs y'all right now. You know what I'm saying? He changed his life. He's a juvenile when he went down. He's ready to live his life out here and take care of his family and do what's righteous.
Absolutely.
C, who called in last week, brother, who called in last week, who I grew up with, who's speaking now. Just a little FYI, but like at the utmost love, respect.
Okay.
Do you have an ID number we can write him to, or to support, or do you recommend that also, or just push all our energy on getting out to the clemency hearing, September 7th?
We can definitely send out his number and definitely the support at the clemency hearing. His number is K as in Kevin 67690 at the Galesburg Correctional Center and Galesburg,
Illinois, 6104,
yeah,
I believe. 646, right.
Yeah,
646. I remember that by heart. Yeah, y'all was deaf. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So he's there now. And,
feel free, since we are on Wednesday, call back in, keep us posted. I think we got a couple more shows before September. We do have a couple more shows before September 7th. We can't push this enough. We can't reiterate enough. And I see it, brother. See it this month. I know him. We grew up together. Feel free. You see, we traveling all over the world about cases. So we have an international listener audience. So do not hesitate to call back next week and keep us posted. And don't feel that it's a burden or. We've been a worry or nothing like that. Again, let's push intensely for the September 7th hearing at the Thompson Center, 100 West Randolph, courtroom 9-31-31. I know you have a number of hearings, but let's be there on the safe side. Make sure we're on deck at 9 o'clock a.m., September 7th.
Yes.
And Brother Chairman, the Brother Ken.
Yes, sir.
Brother Ken Ivy. Hey, please plug me in with that brother. I believe I can do great things. Me and him could do great things. Him on that side, me here in Chicago. You know all the support I got in Chicago with all the guys. I would love to plug with this brother here, man.
Yo, we on it. He going to be here. He going to be live and direct on the 29th and 30th. But I'll make sure I get that connect. I'll plug y'all together, no doubt about it. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
I do ASAP. I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, my brother. And tell my
family. We went a little overtime, y'all. But, hey, again, we had to, y'all. Thank y'all, International Radio. We appreciate y'all. Thank y'all, Freedom All Radio. Thank y'all, comrades. Live in the way. Make history, take history, take history. So, comrade Daphne. Oh, man. Next week, we got to come on deck. Y'all seen this comrade on the deck out there. Alexis Wilson, the kids in Dalton, Illinois. Comrade Cooler, others is on the ground out there, y'all. We need them updates to the comrade, if you can, next week. Also, the case at the gas station. Next week, we need updates to comrade. I know we got a lot of updates about that. We got to get revolution and love, respect. Y'all go to the comrade Queen Daphne's Facebook page. You know what I'm saying? And again, it's ironic. We're dealing with right there in Dalton, and like I think walking distance, the case where the sister was beat inside the gas station trying to go to the bathroom. So, Sister Comrade Daphne, we need you to, again. We go next week. Give us those updates. Comrade, I know we went over time. What you got
to
take us out with?
Brother Jim, free him out. Sam Cook, the change going to come. All this shit going on, man.
So you're right.
Yes, sir. Free him out.
Free him out. Hey, Revolution Solution to Comrade Daphne, man, we got the updates. We still in the buzzing. Man, people's pain reflects. A long time coming, but I know.
change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know